Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Autism Empowerment Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the autism and Asperger's communities. Our show will be starting shortly. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click the Autism Empowerment Radio tab. As a nonprofit charity, we rely on public generosity to fund our programs, special events, and support services. Thank you for considering a tax-deductible donation today. Our show is now beginning.
Hello. Welcome to Autism Empowerment Radio. My name is Karen Krejcha, and I'm the Executive Director for Autism Empowerment, a nonprofit corporation dedicated to providing acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment for individuals and families of all ages and abilities within the autism and Asperger communities. Today's original broadcast date is Friday, December 7th, 2012, and we're doing something a little different today. Our Vice President of Operations, John Krejcha, is going to be serving as a co-host today. Say hi, John.
Hi, John. Hi, how you doing?
Very nice, very nice. And he's going to actually be interviewing me about the recent Developmental Disabilities Local Leadership Legislative Weekend that I had the honor to participate in at the Washington State Capitol in Olympia, Washington. I'm doing the actual intro here instead of John because he's a little bit under the weather, and I want him to save his voice for a special interview that he has coming up today on our sister station, Autism and Scouting Radio. You really want to tune into this because John is interviewing Joey, a teenage Eagle Scout who was diagnosed with Asperger's, and he's currently going through his Eagle Scout Court of Honor this weekend. This will be an inspirational and very interesting broadcast because not only is Joey an Eagle Scout, but he has taken it upon himself to be a mentor to other Scouts with autism. He communicates with Scouts through Skype, and we'll learn a little bit more about how he does that and what got him inspired to do that. So be sure to check that out at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time today at blogtalkradio.com/autismandscouting. I also wanted to thank our recent guest, author, ASPE advocate, and superwoman extraordinaire and personal friend, Jennifer Cook O'Toole. Jennifer spoke with us about social rules for life and how those can be found in her recently released book, The Asper Kids Secret Book of Social Rules, The Handbook of Not-So-Obvious Social Guidelines for Tweens and Teens with Asperger Syndrome. If you missed that interview, you can catch it in our archives. Also check out what Jennifer has to offer at asperkids.com. And in fact, all of our interviews that we do, both on Autism Empowerment Radio and Autism and Scouting Radio, are available for free in archive. There are a couple different ways you can plug into those. One is through blogtalkradio.com/autismempowerment. And if you want to go ahead, you can subscribe to our station from there. Another way that we have found has been really convenient for our listeners is to download our broadcasts or to listen to our broadcasts through iTunes. They have a podcast section there, and you can download to your computer, iPhone, iPad, or favorite mobile device by subscribing for free to our podcast station at iTunes. I found that the easiest way to find it is to go to Google, type in the words Autism Empowerment iTunes, or if you're looking for our scouting station, Autism Scouting iTunes. And then that'll quickly bring up a page where you can see all of our previous broadcasts and get a free subscription. So that's a really kind of cool way to plug into our free services. Before we get started on our interview today, I also wanted to give a quick plug for upcoming events on Saturday, December 8th in the Southwest Washington area. The holiday season is always filled with activities, and this one is no exception. In fact, the 8th is quite a busy day in our community. Actually, to get a lot of details about what's going on, I'd like to invite you to plug into our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/autismempowerment. A lot of times you will see our things there in the news feeds, but because Facebook has a special little algorithm where they only show certain posts, we highly recommend that you actually visit the page as well and check the different stories that we have. We post things, news of interest around the country, around the world, and we tend to have quite a bit in our local Southwest Washington, Portland metro area as well. On December 8th, there are a few different events going on, and One of them is the Club Upside SEPSTA holiday party. There's going to be a Gentle Santa. That's at St. Andrew Lutheran Church. And the details will be on our website at autismempowerment.org and also at our Facebook page within the next hour or two. And there is also a no-paid services caseload workshop that is going to be held at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church in the morning from 10 to 2. That's free. I'll be talking about that a little bit more later in our broadcast. And one exciting thing that is going on is that from 4 to 6 p.m., Brian Tashima, who has been a previous guest on our show a few times, author of Secret of the Songshell, is going to be having a book signing at Kazoodles in Vancouver, Washington. And we invite you to plug into that. Brian's book actually just was nominated for a USA Best Books Finalist Award, and Kazoodles recently supported us with a donation through Neighborhood Toy Store Days. So go ahead and plug into those things as well, and we will have additional details again at Facebook and on our autismempowerment.org website. So since we only have a limited amount of time, I'm going to go ahead and let John take the reins here so that we can get to the topic of interest. And go ahead, John. Take it away.
Well, welcome, Karen. I've been looking forward to talking to you about this recent trip to Olympia for a while now, all week, actually. Let's go back a little bit first before we get to your trip. You've been taking part in what's called the Clark County Leadership Development and Advocacy Training Program. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that first? Because part of this training was this weekend. That's why I wanted to kind of back up just a little bit.
Okay, sure. I'd be happy to. So there is a leadership program. I'm going to try to explain this in layman's terms as much as possible. If you think that I need to clarify things more, just kind of to let me know.
Sure.
And I apologize in advance to listeners if my interpretation of anything that I'm explaining is incorrect. Sometimes it takes me a while to process things, and when it comes to a lot of these different legislative things and the acronyms that go along with them, I try to be as accurate as possible, but any mistakes I take full responsibility for here. But anyway, Clark County once every about 4 years or so gives the opportunity for individuals within the Clark County area to participate in what's called the Clark County Leadership Development Program. Now, this is a program that helps individuals who have developmental disabilities or are perhaps have children with different challenges. It helps them learn to advocate for themselves, advocate for their children. They learn the legislative process. They learn a variety of different things that can help them become more empowered to be able to make a difference in their community and also in the state. It's a year-long program. It meets once a month. It's pretty heavy intensive in terms of the amount of time. We had one workshop in November, and then, or actually it was October, and then October 26th, and then on in November we had the advocacy weekend up in Washington. So the program is sponsored locally through the Parent Coalition. It's held at the ARC of Southwest Washington, and it's sponsored on a larger level through the State Developmental Disabilities Council.
Excellent. So part of your training is actually the trip to the state capitol that you just went on, correct?
Yes, it's Disabilities Leadership Training. It's this year it was called the 2012 Developmental Disabilities Leadership Legislative Advocacy Weekend, and it was Thursday, November 29th, Friday, November 30th, and Saturday, December 1st, and it was held up in Olympia, the state capitol.
Before we get to all of the nuts and bolts, how did you like the capitol, and what were your impressions?
Well, I was very impressed with it. A beautiful capital. I had been once before when we co-founded Autism Empowerment last year. We actually had to take a trip up to Olympia to fill our paperwork out, and so we brought our kiddos along with us and decided it would be a great opportunity, since we had moved from California about 5 years ago, to give the opportunity for our kids and for ourselves as well to get a chance to see the state capital. And if you're in Washington and you haven't had the opportunity to do that, I highly recommend it. You can go. They give free tours. It's really interesting to be able to see the different rooms there. There's quite a difference too, between where the Senate sits and where the House of Reps sits, and there are some interesting stories that go along with that. I'm going to actually post some pictures from the recent trip up on our site shortly as well. So my impression was that it was fascinating, and I had a really good time.
Cool. Who is actually the sponsor of this portion of the training course? Do you know?
Okay, well, so in our area, it's Parent Coalition, which is a program that's currently housed underneath the ARC. Parent coalitions are throughout the state of Washington, and they go out for bid every few years, and they're generally underneath an organization that supports advocacy and support for individuals with developmental disabilities or perhaps physical disabilities, some sort of organization along those lines. And, for example, in this particular case, there were people from the ARC of King County, the ARC of Spokane, and different areas throughout the state. And my understanding is they're all under the parent coalition programs up there. I'm 90% sure on that, on the other ways it worked. But it was a really big cultural diversity of people that were there, representations from throughout the state. We had self-advocates with a variety of different, I say disabilities because that's what it's called, disabilities leadership training. I wouldn't necessarily go around and say I think of these people as disabled. I try to put the capital A in abilities, but for purposes of this conversation, that's what we're talking about. A lot of people that were self-advocates. There was people from ARC University as well, which is up in King County, I believe. There were individuals that were representing the ARC that actually worked for different ARCs throughout the state. There were individuals that were there because they were interested in helping to support their children, which was actually quite a common theme. There were also individuals that were representing other nonprofit organizations that were taking part in the leadership training. So, for example, I represent autism empowerment, but I'm also taking the training. I'm representing there as myself. I'm representing as a parent to my kids. So it's a multi-purpose role. We have individuals that represent our local Down syndrome or national Down syndrome organization and so forth. So I hope that kind of gives an idea of the diversity. There, one thing that was kind of interesting was that I had the opportunity to meet a group that's based out of Seattle that's the Somali Autism organization that was recently founded, and so their big push is to be able to find to provide autism resources for individuals within that culture, that there are some barriers to communication and being able to navigate through the hoops and loops, and so that was pretty fascinating as well. It's great to be able to network with other autism related organizations.
Well, excellent. So why assemble at the state capitol? Why couldn't these groups do that individually, kind of just teach people how to be an advocate locally? Why did they bring them all to the state capitol?
Okay, well, it is a year program. So there are different workshops that have a different theme each month of the year. And this is just specifically one of the workshops in the course, but it's a really significant one because it teaches what the legislative advocacy process is. You get a chance. One of the things that we did was we learned how, for example, maybe when you were a kid, you learned, you watched Schoolhouse Rock and you learned a little bit about how a bill became a law. So we got to learn things like that. We had the opportunity to take a legislative tour with the guide. We did exercises talking one-on-one with policymakers. We also got to practice testifying for committee hearings. These are things that you're not really going to have the same effect within your local area. You get a chance to be able to role play with other people. You get to talk about different things, for example, different policies, different issues of concern that are going to be perhaps put on to try to get bills in the state legislature coming up. We got to talk about public policy advocacy and the disability movement in general, a community action plan. We did a number of different exercises on what makes a good leader, and there were a variety of different exercises that just kind of took place that were both at the hotel and also in, you know, the Capitol building itself. And it was really a fascinating process. I think that part of the reason why it was held there also is to make it a little bit less intimidating. I mean, most people don't normally go and advocate at their Capitol. You know, they don't really necessarily understand, okay, if I wanted to talk about a certain subject, how would I go about and do that? How would I meet with my legislator? How would I testify in a hearing? And so this kind of demystifies some of that process. And if I don't explain it so well here in radio and people have questions, I'm going to be writing a blog about the experience, and hopefully that'll clarify things in greater depth. Sometimes I have a challenge getting things from my head to my mouth, but I tend to be pretty decent at explaining things in writing. So I'll do my best here, and I'll do my best there as well. But, you know, if you have any more specific questions about it, I'll try to answer that as well.
Now, were you able actually to testify, be in front of legislators?
Okay, so it was more of a mock testifying. We did have the chance to meet legislators. We had the opportunity to meet a number of local legislators. They came in during our practice, actually a break between our practice at the lunchtime, and had got an opportunity for picture taking and to talk with local legislators within our district and nearby districts about issues that were of importance to us. But as far as the testifying itself, what we did was we practiced creating on Friday night, we practiced creating a speech that would talk about who we were, share our story, and if we were going to have an appointment, say a 15-minute appointment, because they break these appointments down if you want to meet with your legislator. If we wanted to schedule a 15-minute appointment, what might we talk about? How would we share our story? How can we get our message across to a policymaker within a short period of time? And we went over the nuts and bolts of effective ways to do that. The next day, that was Thursday. On Friday, we were actually at the Capitol, and each one of us in the room, there are probably, I don't know exactly, but there are probably about 50 people or so, I would say. We got the opportunity to hone our message into a 3-minute power-packed testifying, I guess, speech, where we would explain who we were, what we were asking for from the legislators, you know, the reasons why, and so forth. So that was a 3-minute. And they actually had us, because there's a very specific process when you are testifying with at the legislators, it's timed. And so we went through that process where they would time us, and then they'd hold up the 30-second clock and that kind of thing. So hope that kind of answers the question.
Absolutely. Do you have your speech by chance memorized or be able to give that to us?
Okay, well, I will provide my speech later, because it was actually pretty decent. I got some really great feedback about it, but I won't be giving it here. I was basically, the nuts and bolts of my speech was along the lines of getting members to be receptive and open to the fact that individuals on the autism spectrum vary widely. I used, you know, Stephen Shore's famous phrase, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. I told a bit about my personal story. I told a bit about the founding of Autism Empowerment and our four foundational pillars of accept, enrich, inspire, and empower. But my goal was to focus on the heart, to get people to open up and listen. A lot of times when people were doing their testifying, they're asking for a specific thing, like money for the no-paid caseload services, money for, you know, different types of topics. And those are very valid, and I'm not taking away from that in any way, shape, or form, because I do think people should individually advocate for those things. However, since I felt that I was giving my speech on or my testimony on behalf of Autism Empowerment, I wanted to make sure to try to represent as best as I could our community as a whole. And what our community as a whole would want overall is we want acceptance. We want respect. We want to be treated with dignity. We want to have people know that we're not a 1 in 88 statistic for families and individuals that are on the autism spectrum. We are 1 in 1. And we want to be treated one in one. We want, when people are making decisions about healthcare and about funding for different services, I wanted to impart to be able to consider the fact that there's no one size fits all treatment, and that it's better to be able to let families have some choice. And to some consideration in the fact that what's going to work for one family and one individual is not going to work for another. So basically my message was when they go to bed, to remember the one in one, to remember that, you know, we want to partner with them. We're not coming in and looking for handouts, but we want to partner with them to make the best results for each individual so that everyone on the autism spectrum, no matter where they are, has that opportunity to live to their highest potential. So that kind of was what the message was about.
Now, you also talked about partnering with other groups throughout the state as well, correct?
Yeah, yes. That was probably more in my longer message. My personal belief is that we're not in competition with other autism, you know, support organizations. Yes, we are when it comes to trying to raise money. And that kind of stinks because, you know, I don't like to be – I'm a competitive person personally. You know, I did bowl professionally. I've done sports and that kind of thing. However, in this topic, which is near and dear to my heart, it's not about competition. It's about working together, creating a collaborative, vibrant community. You know, that saying, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, we all need, as an autism community, to come together and realize that we're going to have differences. There's going to be differences of opinion in a variety of different things. But I think one thing that we can all agree on is that we need to promote acceptance of children and adults on the spectrum for who they are, where they're at. And when you can do that, you can take the areas where they're having challenges and you can enrich them by providing education and strategies to be able to help them where they're at. You can inspire them along the way by showing stories of success from everyday people, you know, not just the ones that, you know, you hear that were famous, you know, everyday people, because there are a lot of everyday heroes doing wonderful things. And you can empower people to be the best that they can be, to be able, you know, train the trainers, to be able to do things, to be able to live a higher quality of life. So my belief, to answer your question, is that we should work together with autism organizations around the state, around the nation, around the world. I believe that it's imperative for us to come together, and there is a lot of infighting. Unfortunately, so this is kind of a timely topic. Last week, at the time that we were actually up in Olympia, Washington, doing our exercise, and at the time that I was practicing my testimony, that was the time when federal Congress was having their congressional hearing on autism and the prevalence rates changing and so forth. And they had invited a variety of different autism-related organizations from around the country to speak. And there were, fortunately, a couple people that were actually on the spectrum. You know, a lot of times, unfortunately, not enough adults on the spectrum are consulted when it comes time to figuring out what's the best for individuals on the spectrum. And who to know better but people with autism themselves, you know, in a lot
Absolutely.
Of different cases. So, I know someone, Michael John Carley, executive director of GRASP, who was one of the people that was called to testify. And my understanding from the whole thing is that it became...
And Michael John, he actually has Asperger's and a son with Asperger's as well, correct?
Yes, he does. And I had the opportunity to meet him in New York City earlier this year. I was honored for the 2012 Distinguished Spectrumite Medal. He actually presented the medal to me, and also to Jennifer Cook O'Toole and Leanne Holiday Willing and a variety of other people as well. But he's a fantastic guy. He's a fabulous guy. He's thinking of – his philosophy also is that our organizations need to come together, you know, in a way. We're not going to agree on everything. But unfortunately, there are some people within the autism community, and they may be parents usually. Sometimes they're so in they're so passionate. Pardon me?
They're invested, right, and they're
okay,
passionate
so,
about
so, so let's just say I believe that most people come from, meaning well in a good place. But unfortunately, some people impart their opinions so strongly that things are so black and white, which is interesting because a lot of us on the spectrum think kind of in black and white. But they put these causes and cures and all this stuff out there that kind of, like, gets away from the topic of, how do we help people in the here and now? How do we show respect and understanding? You know, how do we show acceptance? You know, it's not about epidemic, in my personal opinion. It's about, you know, whatever the statistic is, we need to work and help the people right now. And I do believe there is validity in having all sorts of research. I believe there's validity in these types of things. But for our organization, our focus is to be able to help people in the here and now. Now, are we going to get the funding that these larger organizations are? No. They've got a lot of wonderful things they do and a lot of large publicity as well. Most of the donations end up going to these types of organizations. And I don't want to say anything negative, but what I do want to say is I think that it's really important that people have the opportunity to plug into what is going to help you in the here and now. You know, yes, you also want to be thinking down the road. Yes, you know, you want to get and say, okay, maybe I have a child with autism right now. He's going to become a teenager or she's going to become an adult. And what am I going to look for? So, yes, you have to be thinking forward, thinking in that type of a plan as well. But as far as, focusing on, well, let's just say that that's the area where I really personally think that families at some point are going, wherever they're at right now in the cycle, at some point they're really going to end up focusing on where they are in the here and now and how to work and to deal with that.
Your point was, like Michael John from Grass was kind of having similar testifying in Congress about those types of issues as well.
Yeah, and you know, this could be a conversation in itself, and I know that there's going to be people out there that disagree with me, and that's fine. I respect where you come from, but I think it's really important as a person with autism myself on the spectrum. I want to be treated with respect. My kids want to be treated with respect, and they don't want to have people talking negatively about people in, you know, that are on the spectrum in front of them. There's a lot that they can understand, and there's a lot that kids that are nonverbal can understand that people don't always give them that benefit of the doubt. So I think no matter what, you know, just showing respect and acceptance whenever you're in front of an individual that's on the spectrum, but just in general, I mean, it should just be part of a rule to just treat people with
absolutely
respect and love, you know? I mean,
now
it isn't something difficult to think about.
Right. Now, we have only about 15 minutes left, and this conversation is wonderful so far. I want to get to back to your trip to Washington. And,
yeah, I won't go off on my own soapbox for the next 15
minutes. No, that's okay. I just wanted to I'm sure you were able to talk to a lot of different people while you were up there about many different subjects. Were there any subjects in particular that on a state level were of concern or interest to the disability awareness community at large?
Okay, so, for example, when we were giving our testimonies, there were a number of different issues that if people didn't have a pet issue, it was suggested that perhaps they try to testify in a certain area. And one of the big things, and in fact, probably one of the big pushes as far as that goes, is that currently there are over 15,000 individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities in Washington State who've been determined eligible for services from the Division of Developmental Disabilities, DDD. However, they're not receiving DDD services because of lack of funding. These are families, individuals that have applied with the Department of Developmental Disabilities, for example, with autism, with Down syndrome, with a variety of different things that qualify under the definition of developmental disability. and they've gotten their paperwork back saying, okay, you qualify, but they're not receiving paid services. And so they're considered on the no paid services caseload. Currently, the caseloads receiving that in our state, they estimated that there were 24,894 people receiving paid services of some sort. That could be respite care, that could be vocational training, that could be a variety of different things. On the caseload that are not receiving any paid services but qualify are another 15,330. Then, within the state, there are people with developmental disabilities but have never applied for whatever reason. It could be because they don't know how to go through the process. It's kind of a confusing process, but it can be made more clear. I can help people if they have any questions about it. Currently, they estimate it's almost 60,000 people.
Then you multiply that by 50 states. That's a lot of people not receiving any type of services whatsoever.
Yeah. Now, I do not know what the statistics would be from state to state, but we could probably make a good assumption that in every state, there are people that qualify for some sort of services that are not getting them, either because they haven't applied and are unaware of it. They don't, you know, the process is too daunting. They're afraid of jumping through the hoops and loops. They're not sure how to do it. It could be a very, very common for it to be a cultural thing. You know, the people in the developmental disabilities communities as a whole are underserved. But then when you add in, you know, different language barriers, culture barriers, socioeconomic challenges, those people are even more underserved. And so there has to be a way to be able to reach those people. And the services that they're qualifying for, it's not just like, you know, it's the most common thing, for example, to get back to your question, that people were looking for, and this is what the big push is to get respite care. That's the most urgent need from families, is to have some sort of respite care, and obviously therapies and medical costs. But overlaying all of that's the need for information, anything and everything that might help avert further stress and help those families plan for the future. So they're looking to create a fair and equitable policy, a public policy. So developmental disability community advocates are proposing legislation and additional funding to address the need. First of all, they want to put the people that are currently on the no-paid services onto the caseload forecast. They want to fund increased information to support families, and the state has a program called the Informing Families Building Trust Project. A lot of people are not aware of that. It's a website that's set up to try to connect families with what's going on in the Washington State developmental disabilities community. We put a link to it on our Facebook page last night. I will put the resources up right now. We haven't yet added it to our website, but we should by the end of the weekend. They also want to hire more DDD case resource managers to conduct assessments of the people that are unserved and help them develop eligibility for Medicaid, personal care, and whatever else they might qualify for. And again, badly needed respite care funding. They want to be able to fund at least 4,000 additional individuals on the NPS caseload per year. So there's a council report called A Troubling Tale, Results of Washington's No-Paid Services Survey. And if you want to take a look at it, it's at www.ddc.wa.gov. So that was their big thing. There were other ones as well, supporting isolation of people with disabilities by guardians and agents with the power of attorney, the guardianship issue. Sometimes one of the issues that was brought up was that guardians and individuals who hold power of attorney sometimes overreach their authority and stop people with developmental disabilities from visiting with friends and family members, even where the person would have welcomed the visit. So they're proposing a bill that would make it clear that the guardian's authority to control visits with others is limited, and the bill would require guardians to get the approval of a judge in order to stop visits between the person and others. So that was another issue that was brought up. A third issue that was brought up was one that was more timely in our state, which was the seclusion aversion rooms. if any of our listeners are out there and they're in the Washington, Oregon state area, actually, I think this got picked up by national news because I heard from around the country that people are starting to hear more about this. There are, in a lot of special education classrooms, rooms that are called different things, seclusion rooms, isolation rooms, aversion rooms, and they're generally small. Some of them are padded, some of them are not. Some of them have beanbag chairs, and some of them have windows, some of them don't. There was a breaking story a couple weeks ago about a school up in, I believe it was Longview, is that correct, John?
That's correct.
Yeah, where there were concerns that these rooms were being used for things like punishment and things that they were not attended to. It opened up the eyes of a lot of people who hadn't heard of these types of rooms. In general, they're only supposed to be, my understanding, which may not, this is my understanding from talking to people within our district, is that people that, and this can vary from district to district, probably even school to school, that individuals are not supposed to be put, kids are not supposed to be put in these aversion rooms unless it's written on the person's IEP, the parents have agreed to and signed that in advance, and then my understanding is it should be more of a last resort type of thing.
Correct.
And families should be contacted the day that that type of a room is used. Now, what's in theory, what's on paperwork, and what's in practice is not matching up. I would like to say that these rooms were being used as sensory break rooms, that which is very much needed. I mean, kiddos on the spectrum oftentimes will have meltdowns or they'll just need to decompress and need a place that's quiet that they can go to relax and not hurt themselves and not hurt others. I think the spirit of that is something that is still very much needed. But what has been happening, and reports of people that actually testified, that practiced their testimony, and that included some teachers, that included some parents, that included people in a wide variety of different types of positions, was that they had witnessed situations where that just wasn't the case. People that were unqualified and untrained were using these rooms to put kids in as punishment. They were leaving them in there for a lot longer than longer than they should have, and it was creating a really horrible atmosphere. So this was a hot button topic, so what they want to do is do some sort of legislative thing that would say that if these rooms are used, then you have to let the parents know. And it would basically put in a bunch of guidelines into place. Now, these were things, when I was sitting there listening to this up there, I thought, oh, well, aren't these guidelines already in place? Aren't they already doing this? And my, mind was thinking, of course these people are trained. Of course they're taking care of our kids. Of course they're not putting them in a way for punishment. Of course that's my, thinking of, oh, goodness, morally, would you ever want to do something that would hurt a child in any way, shape, or form?
That seems like a show just in and of itself.
Yeah, it is a show in and of itself. So, and I'm not going to go into that. What I just want to be able to say is that, yes, whether or not these rooms should be or shouldn't be, there should be some sort of something for kids to go. I personally prefer sensory break rooms that would be larger, that would be open, that would be inviting, that give a place for a child to be able to calm down, maybe have a place where, yes, you can go in and be dark and quiet. We've created different types of sensory rooms for different programs and things that we've done. I talked with my own children about these types of rooms because there's one of each in their schools. And the thing that really got to me is that in every single instance, the kids that are in the classroom that are having to watch someone be put in there, whether or not they're being put in there for whatever reason, the kids that are watching this have not been given, for the most part, an explanation of what it is that's happening. And so how this affects our kids that are left to watch this, let alone the poor kids that are going through this, it's one of those things that is so, scary to me as a mom, that I would prefer to not have those things into place unless there's absolute 100% certainty that it's not going to hurt someone. So, I mean,
maybe we could try to get someone on to talk about that, because that's a great topic in and of itself. Because my clock shows we got about 6 or 7 minutes left, and I just want to be able to wrap up any final thoughts that you had on your legislation weekend that you had.
Okay. I want to
Do you think it was worth it, you going up there and getting this particular type of training?
Well, of course it is. Of course it is. I think any time that people can get more education on how it is that they can go and help their children, help themselves, it's a positive thing. It demystified the process a bit. It still is kind of a complex process, but it can be done. I think that a lot of times people are afraid to get involved in advocating to their legislators because they don't think anything's going to happen. It's sort of like when you're voting and you're thinking, you know, I'm kind of feeling disenfranchised and my vote's not going to matter anyway, so why vote? Well, you vote. You know, you should vote because it's part of the process. You know, you should make your voice known. That's my personal opinion. Whether or not you choose to advocate to a legislator, that's a personal choice. But this weekend taught me more about our systems and processes. Personally, you know, I see that in our state, Washington State, there really is a challenge with money. There's a real challenge with budget. A lot of people are going in and they're wanting different things. A good visual is, you know, you think of a legislator having 8 different appointments a day for 15 minutes apiece, and you get your 15 minutes with them, but then right after that you've got, like, somebody who's in Spokane that's talking about fishing, you've got someone who's talking about wheat, you've got someone talking about another issue, and so you're only going to have a short period of time with them. You want to show the legislators respect as well. You want to try to meet with them on the local level if you really want to go that route. I think that it's important for people to understand what the needs are of our community as a whole, as well as what individual needs are being not met. I do think it's important for people to get involved beyond their home. I believe that it's important to get involved within the community. I personally believe in creating collaborative communities that can make positive change. And I believe that this weekend helped me realize that, yes, you know, I respect the legislative process. I feel very fortunate to have had the opportunity to be up there. But it kind of revved me up to do autism empowerment, because I realized that even if our government is well-meaning, they're not going to be able to serve everybody. And, you know, I'm not expecting that myself. I'm one of those jump-in-and-go persons. I see a big picture. I need help implementing it, but I have ideas. And I really do think that parents know their children best, and that autism advocates, self-advocates, they know their needs, you know, quite well, and that coming together and creating groups and perhaps trying to get money through grants and donations and things that can kind of help in the here and now are going to probably be a more effective way. Yes, you still want to potentially implement change, you know, especially when it comes to things like protecting kids, you know, protection, yes, a lot of types of things. But when it comes to, like, the day-to-day life and the day-to-day grind, I think it's important to figure out what is most important to advocate for and to be able to focus on that.
That's awesome. I don't have the exact clock in front of me, but...
It's 1 minute.
Very good. So I'll just let you take us out. And thank you very much, and it was a pleasure being your co-host today.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Well, okay. My Autism Empowerment Radio friends, I kind of envisioned the interview going a little bit differently. And that's no fault of John's. It's just because sometimes I have a tendency to ramble on tangents. And when I free flow, that just kind of happens. And sometimes I say things and later I think, oh, did I really mean to say it that way? So I just want to thank you for taking the time to listen. I believe that if you want to do the best to empower yourself and your kids. Getting information is the way to go. And I am going to try to help demystify the process of trying to connect with the different agencies, the different hoops you have to jump through in order to be able to find care for your kids, to be able to find care for yourself. One of my personal goals is to make the process a lot easier. It was kind of confusing to me going in on what agency regulates what, who does this, where do we go for that. And if it's confusing to me and I'm working within the nonprofit autism arena, it's probably going to be confusing to other people as well. So I want to try to make that easier. I need your help. I mean, I truly do need your help. We need volunteers at Autism Empowerment. We're trying to figure out what the best structure for that is. We need your financial support. We truly appreciate any type of donation. And you can do that through autismempowerment.org. You can contact us as well if you have questions about that. What we're looking is to, you know, make a positive change for the world for the autism and Asperger communities. We really do believe in that. And this legislative training course is wonderful, but it's just one step of the process. I feel that in order to be able to serve our community best as a whole, I need to educate myself in all different areas so I kind of understand where people are coming from. I like to work with people in diverse backgrounds, diverse cultures. And if they don't have the same opinion as I do, that's okay. I feel that I can work with people with diverse personalities quite well. But I need your help. I need you to tell me what it is that you need for yourself and your children. I need you to let me know what your priorities are so that when, as we develop programs with Autism Empowerment, as we get better funded, we're serving you. Because really, Autism Empowerment shouldn't be just my community, John's community. It's our community. It's a collective O-U-R, and we need to all work together because we live, breathe, sleep, drink autism, Asperger's. It's part of our lives. It's part of who we are. It's not going away. So I would like to look at it with a positive message. How do we promote acceptance? How do we promote enrichment? How do we promote inspiration? How do we promote empowerment? And to help people and meet them for who they are, where they're at this point in their life, and to help them reach their highest potential. If you're interested in joining in on that mission and vision with me, feel free to contact me at Karen@autismempowerment.org. And I'll be happy to connect with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this broadcast today, and I look forward to talking with you again.